Well, welcome back. This would be part two of the introduction from Man Was Not Born to Cry by Joel Goldsmith, which he titled Awake, as in Awake Thou That Sleepest. We are talking about the ascension, always the ascension, ascending up over the mind into the soul realm, which the soul realm has many mansions in awareness of reality. And so the many mansions are not a kingdom up in the sky by and by. They're not even another dimension here. The kingdom is the realm of soul. And the many mansions take place, or the many levels, are the levels of awareness. And so your transformation from mind to awareness is the difference between this world and the kingdom of heaven here and now. In the old days, in the days of King James, when the King James Bible was written, they used terms such as kingdom. But I looked in I think it was Strong's Concordance, and the word originally meant realm. And realm, of course, is, now we know, awareness. So it all takes place in your inner awareness. There you come up over the mind and seeing things through the mind darkly into awareness, pure awareness. Which, of course, is the first chapter of Genesis. Pure awareness of soul, or God. Now, what can you expect to see? Well, it's different for everyone. No two people see the same thing, but we are given some hints in the chapter of the New Horizon, because the New Horizon, now you know, is the soul realm. And so he says, the sense which presents pictures of discord and inharmony, disease and death, and also all the good that you behold, is the universal mesmerism which produces the entire dream of human existence. See, there it is again. Mental malpractice, or universal mesmerism. The word's not important, he says. You can use whatever words you like. Hold on a minute. I wrote some down here the other day, or actually quite a while ago. Let's see where I keep notes in my little journal here. I was looking at this one day, and in April of 1998, I wrote, a belief in two powers, universal belief, world mind, carnal mind, a glass darkly, appearance, illusion, a false image, Maya, hypnotism, mesmerism, personal sense, material sense, this world, or concepts, or universal dream world. So there are many terms. There are many words used to describe it. Maya is, of course, from Buddha and his describing illusion. Now remember, it's not out here. Illusion, no illusion is ever externalized. And so the illusion you are looking at, if you're calling it illusion, is mortal mind. It's a series of beliefs or thoughts in the mind. Therefore, says Christ, take no thought. Stop that. Stop. And in the silence, behold, I am God. I, your soul. And you have a glimpse of the kingdom here and now, or the soul realm, or awareness of soul. So, the sense which presents all these pictures It is a universal mesmerism which produces the entire dream of human existence. And so look at that backwards, and human existence is a dream. All of it. And therefore, he says, it must be understood there's no more reality to harmonious human existence than to discordant world conditions. It must be realized that the entire human scene is mesmeric suggestion, and we must rise above the desire for even good human conditions. This is why he says over and over, we must come to the place where we're no longer trying to establish harmony in the human scene. Because if we succeeded, we would have a happy dream world. And we don't want a happy dream, because then we still die in humanhood and have to come back and try to find the soul realm again. No. Therefore, he says, understand fully that suggestion or beliefs or hypnotism is the substance or fabric, there's that word, fabric, of the whole mortal universe. And human conditions, good and evil, are dream pictures having no reality or permanence. And when you get to that place, it's really uncomfortable, especially if you haven't found the soul realm. Because on the one hand, you're standing there, it's very uncomfortable. You're looking, you're saying, okay, the good and evil of this experience here, of this human, of me, this is a dream world. It has no reality. It's hypnotism. The entire mortal universe, and it has no contact with God. Well, that's pretty scary. God's not in the human scene, Joel says, and we ignore it and go on, thinking with our prayer and meditation we can bring him there. But, no, he says, here at the Hotel Wellington, has no contact with God. The human scene, good or evil, is a product of universal malpractice, carnal mind, mortal mind, and has no contact with God and is not under the law of God. And that is something you must know and know at depth. That's half of the equation. The other half being the awareness of soul. So he says, understand fully that the fabric of the whole mortal universe is suggestion, belief, or hypnotism. And more than that, more than just understanding, be willing for the harmonious as well as the inharmonious conditions of mortal existence to disappear from your experience in order that reality may be known and enjoyed and lived, or in order that the soul realm or the kingdom, the awareness in reality, may be known and enjoyed and lived. So to ascend, you might as well take the new horizon in the infinite way and take this entire first paragraph and understand that this is the first half, or rather this is half of the equation. Doesn't matter if it's the first or the second half, it's half of the equation. And all of this must be true in your experience. You must be living this and understanding this fully in order for you to launch off out into the deep. Be willing for the good as well as the evil to disappear from your experience in order to launch out into the soul realm. So on the one hand, you're standing there and you recognize all of this is a dream taking place within, not without, and has no reality, no permanence, and no contact with God, and no law to support it. It's impersonal, being pumped into the mind by this universal mental malpractice, and it has no power. It's nothing. Nothing behind it. So on the one hand, you're knowing that, but you haven't yet experienced the soul realm. You haven't ascended out of it. You're still standing in it. And then someone says, launch out into the soul realm, but don't bring any of those concepts with you. Don't bring any concepts, not of God, not of spirit, not of soul, not of Christ, not of love, not of the kingdom of heaven, not of the soul realm. Bring no concepts with you. And, oh, by the way, don't bring that self either. Step out of that. Stand there. Stand there knowing that it is a nothingness. And, being empty, listen. Listen for the still small voice. Wait upon the movement. Wait for soul to reveal itself. And know not what that experience is going to be. Have no idea whatsoever. Totally empty. A nothingness waiting for the movement of the hand of God. And there you stand. It's very uncomfortable at first. But it becomes quite wonderful. And now he's going to give you some clues here. He's going to describe his experience of the soul realm, of the soul, of God. Above the sense life, there is a universe of spirit, or a realm of soul, governed by love, peopled, or populated, with children of God living in the household or temple of truth. This world, this universe, this realm is real and permanent. Its substance is eternal consciousness. In it, there is no awareness of discords or even of temporary material good. So, in this soul realm, you will find a universe of spirit governed by love, and the fabric of it is eternal consciousness. You will have no awareness of good or evil, just eternal consciousness ising. The first glimpse, and there we go with glimpse again. Ah, now here he spells it out. The first glimpse of reality, dash, of the soul realm, comes with the recognition and realization of the fact all temporal conditions and experiences are products of self-hypnotism. With that realization that the entire human scene, good as well as evil, is illusion, comes the first glimpse and taste of the world of God's creation and of the sons of God who inhabit the soul realm or the spiritual kingdom. Okay, so he says here, the first glimpse of the soul realm comes with the recognition and realization all temporal conditions are products of hypnotism. What did he say here at the Hotel Wellington? Now remember, this Infinite Way, New Horizon, was written in the 40s or 50s, right? And now here we are, 1960, at the Hotel Wellington, and he's saying the same thing. Here are the four or five secrets you must know to find the soul realm. Here in the New Horizon, he says, the first glimpse of the soul realm comes with the recognition and realization all temporal conditions and experiences are self-hypnotism. It comes with the realization that the entire human scene, good and evil, is illusion. And here at the Hotel Wellington, he writes down, harmony of a permanent nature can only be attained, in other words, the soul realm can only be attained, as you come into the awareness of it through impersonalization and nothingizing of this mental malpractice, or the carnal mind, or this world, or the dream universe, or mortal existence, or humanhood. See, he's saying the same thing. And people do not want to hear about the nature of error, and yet it is through this realization that all temporal conditions are hypnotism and that the entire human seeing, good and evil, is illusion. It's through that realization that you get your first glimpse of the soul realm. And so you must have both parts. You must have the inner deep realization that, well, there's no more reality to harmonious human existence than to the discord or discordant human conditions. You must have that at depth. Then you can let it go. Stop trying to improve it, patch it up. Then you can recognize it for its nothingness, universal mental malpractice being pumped into the human mind, but nothing is standing behind it. No God is behind it. So it's nothingness. But it acts as if it's a power, he says, until it's realized and understood and seen through. And the way you see through it is in ceasing from taking thought. As he said in the Art of Spiritual Healing, take no thought. Rest in the word. And it doesn't matter what that word is. Whatever word you came to in your contemplation. God is. I am. It is. I rest here. I take no thought, not by might nor by power, but by the soul. And then rest in that. Capital W-O-R-D, word. Not the words you just said to yourself, but the word, the original logos. The word was God, and the word was made flesh. So you rest in the word, that word, the original I within. And then you catch a glimpse of the soul realm, and you find out that there's a universe of spirit, a realm of soul governed by love. And there's beings in it. These beings are children of God. And this realm is real and permanent. Its substance is consciousness, eternal consciousness. And in that realm, there's no awareness of duality. There's only awareness of the soul. So, with the realization that the entire human scene, good as well as evil, is illusion, comes the first glimpse and taste of the soul realm, or of God's creation, and of the sons of God who inhabit the spiritual creation. So, in this first glimpse attained by impersonalizing and nothingizing the dream world and dream mind out of which it came or comes, in the standing still from that, recognizing both sides to it, good and evil, are illusion in the mind, and ascending up over the mind in the realm of the soul, where you feel its movement even as I do right now. Here you become aware of the soul realm, the soul of you, God of you, God as you. And you rest. And you rest. And the light is shining. And it dissolves these mental projections. Now, he says, in this moment of uplifted consciousness, we are able, even though faintly at first, to see ourselves free of material, mortal, human, and legal laws. We behold ourselves separate and apart from the bondage of sense, and in a measure we glimpse, there's that word again, glimpse the unlimited boundaries of eternal life and of infinite consciousness. The fetters of finite existence begin to fall away. See, we're having an awakening, aren't we? The experience at first is like watching the world disappear over a horizon and dropped down from before us. There's no attachment to it, no desire to hold on to it. Probably because, to a great extent, this experience does not come until a great measure of our desire for the things of this world has been overcome. You see how you have to come to the place where he's starting this chapter, awake, in knowing that this is not about patching up the human scene? He says elsewhere that he had a hard time explaining to the students that it's not a matter of bringing God down to the human scene, but in rising above the human scene to the realm of soul. At first we cannot speak of it. There's a sense of touch me not, for I have not yet ascended. I want you to understand, when you first have this glimpse, if you haven't had it, it is so, well, earth-shattering, so startling, so wonderful, that you will know intuitively you cannot speak of it. You just cannot. So there's a sense of touch me not, for I have not yet ascended. No, I'm not up here permanently. I'm still traveling back and forth. I ascend up into the soul realm, and I come back down to human thinking. And I ascend back up, and I come back down. But eventually, the ascension will be a permanent transformation. So he says one more time, he wants you to know this. Remember now, this is the secret that the world does not know, which is that harmony of a permanent nature can only be attained as the spiritual self or the soul realm is realized through impersonalization and nothingizing of the carnal mind or mental malpractice, and then a launching out into the deep in silence. So he says, a universal illusion binds you to earth. Realize this. Understand this. Because only through this understanding, that's half of the equation, can we begin to lessen its hold upon us. The more fascinated we are with conditions of human good, the greater our desire for even the good things, the more intense is the illusion. And so if you're still practicing principles to heal that cold of yours, or to increase your harmony at work, or to increase your supply, if you're still trying to demonstrate anything other than death of the human and ascending into the soul realm, then you are, well, more intense is the illusion. However, in proportion as our thought dwells on God, on the things of the Spirit, the greater freedom from limitation we are gaining. This should not be thought here, this should be awareness. In proportion as our awareness is on God. So he says, don't think neither on the discords nor on the harmonies. That's it, don't think on either one, because then you're thinking, well, then you're in the human mind. Let us not fear the evil nor love the good of human existence. In proportion as we accomplish this, the mesmeric influence lessens, and we are lifted. We catch a glimpse. Well, here it is. The first glimpse into the heaven of here and now is the beginning of the ascension. This ascension is understood as rising above the conditions and experiences of this world, or the dream mind. And we behold many mansions prepared for us in spiritual consciousness, in the awareness of the soul realm. So, the many mansions are in your awareness of the soul realm. And finally, no good thing is withheld from us as we look above the physical evidence or the mind to the great invisible, to the soul realm. Look up. The kingdom of heaven, the soul realm, is at hand. And finally, the I of you am ever with you, so look up. All right, so that is the New Horizon, where he explains the soul realm and gives you some hints about what you might experience. Now, getting back to our original halfway point in this introduction from the book Man Was Not Born to Cry, called Awake. Remember, he says, "I wish I could use as a title for a book Santa Claus God, because that is what the majority of the concepts of God are. And be assured that no one can enter the realm of the soul with any such God in mind. You have to leave behind all that you have heretofore expected." All right? So, he says, "You long to tell your companions what you are thinking and what you are doing on the spiritual path, and you want to share your joys and your successes, but that cannot be done on this path, because those who have not been there can have no way of being able to share them. Only rarely do you find a companion with whom you can share, and even then you discover that there are some things that must remain forever hidden. Do you not understand that if you tried to explain to someone..." Well, he was sneaky. He wrote it in the chapter The New Horizon, very briefly, just in one or two or three paragraphs, that above this sense life is the soul realm, and here's what you'll find. But he couldn't go out and explain that to people, talk to everyday people, as he's riding in an airplane to South Africa and finds himself next to a person on the airplane. Could he start talking about that? No. He said he never talked about spiritual matters. Like everybody else, he talked about the weather and whatever the current politics were, probably. Whatever topic the person brought up. Always with his finger on his lips. Because no one would understand that. I can't go tell somebody what it felt like when I was dissolving. Right there, sitting in my meditation, I was dissolving and becoming infinite. I felt my presence everywhere throughout the house, in every room, and every room inside of me, and we were one. And I was about to go infinite. I can't explain that. Who can explain that? How does that feel? They think maybe you are fooling yourself. So he says, "Does this not account for the Master's loneliness during his 3-year ministry? When he wanted to reveal some of the secrets of the soul realm, or the fourth dimensional life, he could take only 3 of his disciples with him. All 12 could never have been prepared to see that the men who lived 500 years before the time of the Master were not only living then, but were standing right there with them, sharing with them their wisdom. He never told that to the 12 disciples, only to 3, and I am sure there were some secrets he did not tell even the 3. This is that aloneness that comes in this life when we find that we can share our accomplishments and attainments with only a very few." And that, again, is something that makes people very uncomfortable. It makes some very uncomfortable, because who wants to live in this inner ecstasy and not be able to tell a single person? It really is sometimes quite lonely. And yet it's not alone, because the presence of God is right there with you. Your own soul, the soul realm, is right there at hand. You may go in and come out and find pasture. Yet, we long to have another person to look at eye to eye and say, "This is the experience, and it's so wonderful." And to hear them say, "Yes, I know." Now, I was told by my very first teacher that years ago, centuries ago, you might go your whole entire life and only see one other person at some point that had this awareness. And he said, now we're spoiled if we go a year or two and we meet somebody. We think that's not enough. And perhaps he was right. So I'm talking to about 20 of you, and I hope you are not afraid of aloneness. The moment you enter the higher consciousness, or the soul realm, your vision expands, and you can see events of the present, the past, and the future. It is like standing on an 11th floor balcony where you can see for miles in all directions, whereas the man on the street is aware only of that which is taking place right before his eyes. And again, that adds to the aloneness, because if you can see, or let us put it this way, when you are in the soul realm and you see all of this, all the good and the bad, are a part of this mental malpractice being projected into the mind. How can you then stand up and fight for a cause? Any cause. I don't care how beautiful it is. Are you not patching a human dream world? Now, I'm not saying that you should go live on the side of a mountain in a cave somewhere and become an ascetic. But on the other hand, well, like Joel, he says he believes that these principles need to be practiced right in the midst of wherever you find yourself, and that he finds joy in meeting others on this path, and you can't do that when you're sitting in a cave. But do you not see that it sort of drains from you all of these causes you were ready to pick up and battle for? You see the futility of it. You're standing on the 11th floor looking out. You can see all the way to the coast and maybe beyond, partway to the ocean. But the man on the street, he just sees the stores across the street and the cars coming down the street and the people. Perhaps the clouds overhead and the trees. And you can't talk about it. It becomes lonely at times. And so many people cannot endure that aloneness. It's too uncomfortable. And they go back. They choose, perhaps unconsciously, to remain a human being. Not quite ready to launch out into the deep, the unknown, infinite, eternal. Man was not meant to cry, and all his tears are shed only because of a sense of limitation. Every tear you shed is proof of some form of limitation being experienced in your life. Man was not born to cry. The more you search around in your body and in your mind, the more imprisoned you will become. Do not think for a moment that you are free of the body or the mind. Rather, you must understand, through your study, you are breaking out of the body and the mind into the realm of the soul. When you reach that soul realm, and even as you approach it, the mind and the body will be discovered to be more receptive to God government and require less and less of human attention. Eventually, you will be released from this imprisonment by an act of grace. Something will happen to you. Again, what is he saying? He's saying that this will be a permanent transformation. Remember, he told us one of these secrets at the Hotel Wellington, that he realized that the human scene has no contact with God. Yet, in the final secret, he says, harmony in the human scene does come when we reach the realm of the soul through impersonalizing and nothingizing. It all fits together perfectly. So, this is the same as seek the soul realm, and harmony will be revealed. Why? Because as the light touches the darkness disappears, and more of the soul realm is revealed. Only the mind interprets that as harmony. So, eventually, something will happen in you, an act of grace, in which the soul realm becomes the governing factor in to you. The soul realm manifests itself. Now you're no longer living, watching the human mind manifest its good and its evil, sometimes good, but mostly evil, as a human existence, a dream world. Now you're not living in that sense of me. Now you're standing aside and watching the soul realm manifest itself as the Son of God, divine love forming itself. And eventually this becomes a permanent transformation. You become not a human, but you become Christ, which is the activity of God on earth, or the activity of God appearing. And it becomes a permanent dispensation. All right, so he says, eventually you're released from this imprisonment by an act of grace. Something will happen to you. In the Beyond Words and Thoughts chapter, the unveiling, he says, eventually the soul takes over. It lives you. That's what we're doing. We're making that transformation within. And we're standing, well, we're making the ascension over the mind and the human dream experience into the soul realm and the living Christ experience. We've had this opportunity presented to us many, many, many times. Now I believe that we're ready. I believe we're really ready to do this, to have this experience. With all of these efforts, you prepare yourself for that act of grace, which will eventually set you free. You can see why angels are pictured with wings, and the reason that I speak of soaring thoughts, mountaintop experiences, or lofty heights of consciousness. Because when the soul is released, it flies upward, not in time and space, but in consciousness. Again, the realms of soul, the many mansions, are in awareness of reality. And the soul flies upward in consciousness. It's all taking place in your consciousness, moving out of the mind into the soul. It's no longer anchored to the ground or entombed in a body and a mind. It is a soaring awareness, a soaring faculty. When a person experiences physical death, it's mistakenly thought that his soul leaves his body. But that's a mistaken sense of an actual truth. And the truth is, as you die daily, which is what we're talking about, to the mental and physical sense of life, then the soul is released and flies upward. All right? It becomes alive because of your death of the false sense of self. In that day, you are released from the tomb of body and mind. And then the soul is free. Yes, the soul realm becomes your permanent dwelling place. Whether walking, talking, eating, sleeping. You are the soul that lives. But first you must know that the you that is that soul. And then you must begin to explore, search, and seek until you find me. Until you find yourself, your soul, the real you. That is the you that God sent forth to live God's life on earth. the you that was never born, the you that will never die, the you that for a moment is entombed in a parenthesis and struggling to break out. And here he repeats his exercise. If you search your body from your toes to the top of your head, trying to locate where you are, you will discover you do not exist anywhere between the head and the toes. You cannot find yourself in any part of the body. And this should give you your first clue. If I am not in this body, where am I? And so the search for man, the man of God's creation, begins. And the great adventure has begun. So the search for man of God's creation begins. That which is made is not made of that which doth appear. And that includes you. You are not made of that which doth appear. That which doth appear is a mental malpractice, universal, pumping into everyone's mind. But that is not you. And as you let it go and become willing to let it go, bad and good, be willing, he says, you must be willing to let them both go and stop trying to patch it up. Then you can drop it and stand still. And in this stillness, ascend into the soul realm. All right. You will be able to see God has planted the fullness of Himself in you, and nothing can be added to you, and nothing can be taken from you. You really do live in your self-completeness in God, in your soul, in the soul realm. You will then never seek outside yourself, but you will be free to share 12 baskets full every hour of the day without any thought. Then you will be living a life of joy, heaven on earth, but not until you see me as I am. See yourself as it is, not locked up in a body, no. Incorporeal, spiritual, omnipresent, free. And then you will know why it is written in the song Celestial by Krishna, weapons reach not the life, flame burns it not, water cannot overwhelm, for you are I, made of the very nature of God, indestructible, indivisible, inseparable from God. Neither life nor death can separate you from life, God, love, fulfillment. And that's the introduction by Joel, written on June 30th, which is today, only 1963. And so he wrote that exactly 50 years ago today. Isn't that interesting? I had no idea. He invites you in that introduction to leave behind the limited human sense of self, that universal mental malpractice pumped into the human mind. He invites you to drop it, to see its nothingness. Make no attempt to patch it up, change it, or improve it. Just drop it. Do not bring it with you. He invites you to leave behind all your concepts. Leave them on the shore. Leave them. Loose them and let them go. He invites you to step into the boat of is. Launch out into the deep, into the center of the soul realm within you. Let your soul reveal itself. Be still and know. Launch out into the deep and stand still. Invite the soul to reveal itself, to take over. No concepts, no self, no ideas, just an empty vessel floating listening, waiting upon the Lord. And says Joel, the day will come when this will be your permanent dwelling place, and the soul will take over. And then grace lives your life. You're no longer under the law of mental malpractice. You are free. No more evil. No more good. Just God, soul, manifest, ising. The harmony of being. Your incorporeal spiritual self, your eternal infinite life, living itself as itself, as soul. Thank you, Joel. We accept the invitation. We take your invitation and we launch out into the deep. We recognize our place in infinity. We recognize we are in the middle of an ascension, a transformation from humanhood to Christhood. We do not know what that is as an experience, but we are ready. We launch out. We act on the invitation. Act as though I am and I will be, saith the Lord. And this act is an inner act. Letting go, launching out, and resting on an infinite sea of spirit. Thank you, Father. God is, I am, soul. Please, my friends, take a moment, drop me a private email or public, it doesn't matter. Tell me if you're enjoying these uncomfortable talks, if it's helping. I would like to know. In 1959, Joel became aware that he wasn't aware that the students weren't getting the principles of impersonalization and nothingization. They were not understanding the nature of error, and so he devoted the entire, or he was instructed to devote the entire year of 1959 to teaching those principles, so the students would have a firm grasp on that half of the equation, because until then all they knew was contemplating God and how beautiful God was, and they were missing the other part. Now here we are, 50 years after his writing that introduction called Awake, 50 years to the day, and I'm wondering if you're getting these principles I'm spending time pouring out. Now if you are or you aren't, I would still spend time pouring out, because that's what's happened to me. I can't stop it. But I would still like to know if you're benefiting, if you're finding these talks helpful. I'd like to know. Because sometimes I make a talk and or two or three and time goes on and I hear from one or two people and I know hundreds are hearing them when I put them on the website, and yet no one is saying anything. And so it would be helpful to me if I could get a feeling of whether or not you're getting something from these talks, okay? So I look to hear from you, and if you have questions, oh, by all means, write. Please write. I have to give it away. I have to share. And so if you have questions, I can share and maybe lift your burden, make it easier. Or if you have things to share that are beautiful, I'd like to hear that too. Okay, this then brings to a close part two of the introduction, Awake, from the book, Man Was Not Born to Cry. And as always, I wish to say thank you very, very much. And I love you.